From ESG Post in Singapore, I'm Zara Maung, and this is the ESG Podcast. As sustainability disclosure increases in popularity within Asia, Paul Smith, former CEO of the investor training body CFA Institute, discussed with me how far ESG-related investment has progressed in the region and how best to channel future investment towards the Sustainable Development Goals. Paul, thank you so much for joining me. Could you tell me a little bit about your background in Asian investment and how you've seen ESG-related investment in Asia develop over the last decade?
Well, very nice to be here, Zara. Thank you for asking me. I've been living and working in Asia for the last 25 years at various levels as an asset manager, as a banker, and also as the CEO of a not-for-profit. So I've had the benefit of looking at this issue from multiple different approaches and continue to look at it as a non-executive director on various investment funds and as a private investor in the region as well. It's come a long way in the last 25 years. There's no question about that. When I go back to 1995, when I first came into Asia, corporate governance was a much more pressing issue than it is today. The development of corporate governance codes, the adoption of corporate governance codes, I think has moved Asia significantly forward in terms of minority interest protection and in terms of holding directors and majority shareholders to account. More recently, you've seen a huge development in green finance, for instance. China is the world's largest issuer of green bonds. You've seen a lot more interest within pollution control within Asia, still a long way short of where it needs to be. And obviously, the other trend that I would sort of point to over the last 20-odd years is development of microfinance and financial inclusion, attempts to improve financial inclusion, not just through microfinance, but also through financial technology. And so I think those are the big trends that I've seen develop: corporate governance, financing methods, technology, microfinance, pollution control.
And how does the Asian market for ESG investment differ from other regional markets? What opportunities and challenges are you seeing today?
The word Asia covers such a multitude of sins. You've got developed countries like Japan, Hong Kong, Singapore. You've got economically second-tier countries at the moment who are in the mid-market world, like China and Korea and Taiwan. And then you've got a lot of very poor countries in Indochina specifically, but India as well. So Asia, I often think when one talks about Asia, you sort of lose information as opposed to gain information, because aggregation doesn't really help with the sort of the way that you think about Asia. I think what where we differ to the rest of the world is that I think our corporations are still primarily family controlled. So I think that's a big point to make, that a lot of companies in Asia have very weak governance as a result of being controlled by companies. And financial institutions in general and political institutions in general in Asia are of relatively recent vintage and therefore are quite weak. And so the combination of those two things means that mobilizing capital for broader societal benefit doesn't work quite as smoothly as it does in more developing countries, where savings tend to get channeled more efficiently towards investment opportunities that are more clearly in the public interest. And I know we're very frustrated in the West that we don't do that as well as we could, but it's significantly better. The function of the capital markets in the West is significantly better than in Asia.
And how about on the opportunities side?
Well, there's no shortage of those, really. Obviously, we have the thing that, from an ESG perspective, that smacks one between the eyes in Asia is obviously pollution. Wherever you go, it has different forms. I think everybody has seen the shocking photographs out of India about the air quality pollution in India. In China, it's slightly better, but still in major conurbations in China, where air quality control is a real problem. And indeed, in my own country where I live in Hong Kong, pollution control, air quality is appalling. So the opportunity through clean energy, the opportunity through motor vehicles, cleaning up motor vehicles, for instance, is huge. In agriculture, we have big opportunities as well. We're still largely in agrarian economies in Asia. Deforestation is a big issue. Palm oil production. Those are also big opportunities and challenges. And obviously, a lot of Asia is very low-lying. So coastal erosion is another area that's extremely important. You think about the Maldives, you think about Bangladesh, how we protect ourselves against rising sea levels is going to be a big challenge. And then, on a broader front, the bigger opportunities are bringing more women into the workforce. That's something that I've worked very hard on over the last 5 or 6 years. When you think about countries like Japan, developed countries, developing countries like India, the proportion of women in the workforce and the opportunity that women have to get to the top is something that I think when one looks at the S of the S&G, which is all too often neglected and certainly often neglected in Asia, that's a big issue. And also financial inclusion. Finally, I would say that's probably a challenge that we are rising quite well to meet, an opportunity that is we're rising quite well to meet. Technology is enabling us to bring savings products, insurance, loans to billions of people, literally billions of people who didn't have those opportunities in the past. And so financial inclusion, I think, is an enormous opportunity through financial technology to push society forward. So I think those are the major opportunities that I see: pollution, women, deforestation, alternative energy, social impact investing through financial inclusion. So lots to do. No shortage of opportunity.
Yeah,
so and actually quite exciting, really, in the sense, it's easy to get depressed about these things. But I think, a lot of the solutions are at hand when you think about things like, for instance, microfinance in Asia, which grew up in Bangladesh and other countries in Asia that were adopting it. That model has come under a lot of pressure and a lot of criticism, but there are some exceptionally good microfinance businesses in Asia that are helping small businesses thrive and driving employment and economic opportunity. And that's something that really is the child of the last 20 years, which is making a big difference throughout Asia. I wouldn't say all of the solutions are at hand, but a lot of the solutions are there and a lot of them are being actively pursued. But we are in the broad scheme of things, when you look at economic development, Asia as a collective is a long way behind other parts of the world.
As you mentioned, ESG investment is seen as a potential solution to a lot of social and environmental problems in the region. And that has led to the fairly rapid development of the ESG field, I think, in Asia. Do you see more developments over the coming year? And can you point to any specific ESG investment developments that you can see arising over 2020?
I think you'll see more green bond issuance throughout Asia. You'll see a broadening of green finance initiatives, which primarily have been carried by China in the last 5 or 6 years. But I think you'll see the issuance of green finance spread, or green fixed income securities spread much more broadly. Singapore, Hong Kong, and India, I think, will be notable issuers of green bonds going forward. I think we haven't talked about the Belt Road Initiative coming out of China. That is something that I think is going to be talked about more and more in 2020. The West tends to focus on the negative aspects of Belt Road, some of the unfortunate side effects of Chinese investment in Africa and Asia and elsewhere. But I think what you'll see over 2020 is a much more positive approach to the way that Belt Road investment is improving infrastructure, but improving infrastructure in Asia in an environmentally responsible fashion. So I think that's another big trend that you'll see. And then finally, I think this theme of financial inclusion, wherever you go in Asia, you see technology revolutionizing payments mechanisms, particularly throughout Asia. We have a lot of, remember, we have a lot of migrant workers in Asia that operate at very low levels of income and tend not to be have access to banking services, for instance. And I think you'll see that that's a big development, using blockchain technology as well as other types of financial technology to help secure the payments chain for those people, so that not so much money is leaked out in foreign exchange transactions and intermediary fees, as well as providing better contractual certainty for migrant workers as 2020 develops. So I think that's another area that I see a lot of very positive development on in the next 12 months.
The Sustainable Development Goals are looming large over Asia. Yeah. And moving towards 2030, how do you see the Asian ESG investment field responding to those goals? And do you think we need a more joined up approach? For example, you've mentioned financial inclusion. Would that be, do you think, at the expense of the environmental goals, for example? And how could that be remedied?
Well, I hope not at the expense, but I mean, the point that you make is a good one, and goes back to some of the earlier questions, that the SDGs are quite difficult in the developing world to comply with at all times. You know, you think about things like child labour, for instance, obviously something that we all oppose, but in very poor countries is something that is the fact of life, basically an important fact of life. You think about some dirty coal or clean coal-fired power plants. It's the exclusion of those is a first world luxury rather than third world necessity, where we have to help developing countries achieve some form of financial prosperity whilst we await cleaner energy sources that can come along behind and be developed to hopefully remove some of the dirtier methods of energy production that we currently employ. So for me, it's the SDGs are in Asia in many ways a more a statement of directional intent rather than absolutes that you have to comply with. And I think the West has to do a better job of trying to put that narrative into better context, really. And I think that's where the developing world, particularly in Asia, gets very frustrated with the West, because they see things like the SDGs as the West imposing standards that are going to keep Asia in a relatively undeveloped state. And so, you know, as much as Asian countries want to comply with the SDGs, they see them more as a directional comment rather than as an absolute goal in a period as short as the next 10 years. So I guess that's what I'm looking for, is a much more sensitive approach to how we apply SDGs on a global basis. And I think that's something that we haven't really wrestled with at the moment. So yes, you know, a lot more money has to be poured into basic infrastructure in Asia, for instance. And I think that's going to be a big ESG challenge. How do we build more roads, rail, port infrastructure in Asia, and how do we do that in a responsible fashion? You know, those are not incompatible goals, but whether we can accomplish them, whether we can tap into the finance that's going to be necessary and the methods of corporate governance that are going to be necessary to achieve that, I think is a big question mark.
Do you see any best practice examples in Asia at the moment where people are seriously tackling these issues and trying to marry up the environmental and social imperatives for the next decade?
Yeah, I do. I think, you know, I'm trying to sound as an apologist for China, but I think in China they do a lot of these things very well, partly because obviously their political system is different. I'm not trying to make a point there, but their political system is much more controlled, much easier for China to direct its investment in a way that they feel is socially responsible. So in my own backyard, when I look at a city, a development of a city like Shenzhen, which is just over the border from Hong Kong, I look at that and say, well, the way that Shenzhen has been developed in terms of the quality of the buildings, the way that power is generated, the way that sewage is treated, I think, yes, those are global best practices. I think China is very, very serious about trying to make sure that the country develops in a way that is healthy and sustainable. So I think in a lot of these technologies and a lot of these in a lot of the way that they plan for urban development in China, I think we all have a lot to learn from the way that they're doing things.
People often talk about the culture of the investment industry and how that needs to change if we're going to move towards more sustainable investment. Do you think that's the case in Asia? Do you think the investment industry needs to change its focus or its culture?
I think that's a great question, and I'm a little less positive about that in Asia than I am in the rest of the world, because I think the financial services industry responds to two pressures. One is government regulation, and the second is client demand. And government regulation is mainly focused in Asia on market development rather than market control, if I can put it that way. And client demand is still very basic in Asia. When you think about the average client in Europe, for instance, in a Western European context, they are thinking about how to use their savings in a way that is going to benefit society. In Asia, that because we're a lot poorer in general than people are in Western Europe, our impulse in Asia is still to accumulate funds rather than to worry too much about how those funds are being invested for society's benefit. So both regulation and client demand, I think, are a little behindhand, if I can put it that way, in terms of pushing forward ESG than they are in the West. And I don't see in the next 5 years that that gap is going to close particularly smartly. I think we're still going to be lagging, particularly in terms of client demand. I mean, going back to what I was saying earlier on, financial market penetration, financial product penetration in the population in Asia is low, and so the client demand for sustainable investment products, for instance, and the concern over the way that their finances or their monies, their savings, are being invested, just isn't there yet in terms of the pressure that is placed upon investment intermediaries in the West. So I think, you know, I think that is a missing piece that is going to take a generation to develop in Asia rather than 5 to 10 years.
One of the drivers behind regulation on ESG in Asia seems to be that it allows countries to attract foreign investment. Is that going to change the investment environment in Asia, do you think?
I think that's a great question, because I think there are two sources of foreign investment. There's Asian foreign investment that can come through things like the Asian Infrastructure Bank, the ADB, which can be offered on different terms to Western finance. And I think Asian investment, inward investment into other Asian countries in general, as a generalization, is offered slightly more freely than IMF or World Bank or other forms of Western supranational finance, which tends to come with the sort of ESG constraints that we've been talking about, and is much harder for developing Asian countries to access, and indeed a much longer process. If you're going to finance a new road or a new port, if you're trying to do that from Western sources, the due diligence process that you have to go through is a lot more time-consuming than it would be if you were looking for that money from supranational sources in Asia. So I do think that's a bifurcation that you're beginning to see, that it is challenging for a lot of Asian governments to access global finance opportunities. And I don't see that that's going to change over much. And kind of goes back to what I was trying to say earlier on about SDG goals, is Sustainable Development Goals, that the West, I think, needs to do a better job of using those goals as directional signposts rather than absolutes, if it is to be more successful in helping Asia move forward and in deploying capital in the right way in Asia. I think we need to be less absolutist about it and more concerned about whether we're moving the needle in the right direction rather than we're doing everything perfectly.
So despite quite a lot of mandatory ESG reporting measures being put in place in Asia, you think we're still a long way off sustainability being at the forefront of investment in the region?
I don't want to be too negative about it, but I think it's still a concept that is more in the, I hate to use this phrase, but just for the sake of the podcast, you know, it's more in the box-ticking end of the spectrum than fundamentally founded or fundamentally rooted in the way that Asian entities really think about investment. So when I look back in Europe and North America, say over the last 10 to 15 years, I think, you know, we're sort of 10 to 15 years behind in terms of our appreciation, our belief in ESG as a way forward for investment. And it's reminiscent of the conversations that we used to have, as I say, in Europe 10 or 15 years ago, where people did things because they felt that it would give them a short-term advantage or short-term access to inward investment for one reason or another, but weren't really fundamentally rooted in the thought processes that ESG investors now have. And I think, you know, I think that's the progression that we're undergoing in Asia, that people are doing things because ESG things, because they know that that's going to make them more attractive to foreign investment. They're not doing them necessarily because they believe that they are the right thing to do. And that has to come from a combination of societal change, really. And again, you know, I think the West needs to do a better job of looking at Asian societies and saying that a lot of them are still young in every sense and developing, and the sorts of pressures that we have coming from our societies in the West are not quite there in Asia at the moment, because people are concerned with rather more basic things, you know, how to get housed, how to get education for their children, how to have some security as they get older, how to have access to basic healthcare. And, you know, those are the things that drive a large portion of the Asian population. ESG, to some extent, is a Western luxury because it costs money. And we haven't yet tied those two things together to make ESG an investment priority that is going to power development going forward. And that's the piece of the jigsaw that's kind of missing at the moment.
A lot of talk on the investment front about climate change at the moment seems to centre around climate risk, for example, via the TCFD recommendations that a lot of companies and investors are trying to implement. How do you rate the Asian investment industry's current approach to short, medium and long-term ESG-related risk? And is that something that you think could be improved?
Oh, well, it very definitely can be improved. That's the easy part of that question. We could all do better, and we certainly could in Asia. I think from a purely environmental perspective, we're still, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, we're still in the sort of 1 to 2 area. And it's not a major driver or imperative in Asia.
Do you think that's something that will develop over the course of the next decade as people look towards how they could develop more sustainably?
Yeah, no, I'm absolutely sure it will, because I think the big issues that are in front of any country as it gets wealthier, and let's just look at the two big countries in Asia, which are India and China, population-wise, as they get wealthier, people priorities change from the basic provision of financial requirements towards living better lives in a broader sense. And so as countries move up the economic scale, and China is very definitely there now as a middle-income country, the government's focus shifts towards providing a better quality of life in every sense rather than basic financial necessities. And that's very definitely where China is now. And so that's why that you hear so much more from them in terms of pollution control, particularly, but in terms of all sorts of other aspects as well, in social housing. If you look at the latest five-year plan, the number of poor Chinese people who've been rehoused over the last 5 years in accordance with the five-year plan goals is enormous. And I think, we forget some of those things. We focus just on environmental issues, but obviously these governments have many other things on their agendas that they have to face. So yeah, as Asia gets wealthier, the environment comes more into focus. Can Asia get wealthier quick enough to enable us to have the demand pressures that are going to push us more and more into environmental investment, I think is the question. Can we get Asian populations to a perspective where the environment becomes their core focus, as it has become for us in the West, before climate change has irreversible damage, is I think the challenge before us all, and that requires more sacrifice from the West, really, because I think if we are to sort of square that circle, investment needs to flow from the developed world to the developing world, because for the developing world to get to that point, I think is a generation and a half away. And if we believe that climate control, climate change is the challenge of the next 20 to 30 years, then the only way that that is going to be resolved is by the West investing far more than it currently does in sustainability in Asia. And in Africa, by the way. Africa, I think, is an even bigger challenge.
The UN has already set a high target for financial investment in sustainable development. Can you think of any ways in which that flow of investment into ESG issues can be encouraged over the next 10 years?
Yeah, I think it's a big political question. I think it's very hard to expect the financial markets to be the only mechanism by which this transfer of wealth can occur. There has to be a political conversation alongside of it. And I think perhaps for a European audience, it's perhaps easier to think about this in an African context than it is in an Asian context. Why should European countries invest in Africa, in the sustainable development of Africa going forward? Well, because if they don't, on your backyard in Europe, you're going to have an ecological nightmare that is going to drive outward emigration, apart from anything else, but also a lot of the unfortunate environmental side effects that you want to avoid. And so it's more about trying to position the West as part of the world rather than the way, unfortunately, the popular politics works today, which is polarizing the way that countries think about themselves, that Europe can exist without thinking about what's going to happen in Africa, what's going to happen in the Middle East, what's going to happen in Asia, America ditto, that we're actually all part of a global ecosystem, that if we don't do more to protect, we don't transfer more of our wealth towards helping these regions of the world develop sustainably, we're all going to be the poorer for it in the long term. The Amazon rainforest is another case in point. How do we help Brazil protect the Amazon? They're not going to be able to do it themselves. They don't have the wealth to be able to do it themselves. We're going to have to help them do it. And I know there's they're very constructive questions around that, but I think it's more of a political debate. How do we help our developed societies think of their future in a global context rather than just expecting financial markets to be a perfect mechanism of transforming wealth from west to east on the basis of financial return alone. I think that's not going to happen, or not going to happen as quickly as we like it to happen. So as much as I'd like to believe that the financial world has and does have a big role to play, I think the bigger role is trying to explain to our populations that as sustainable development in Asia, Africa, and Latin America are absolutely core to our sustainable development in Europe and in North America.
Do you see these financial mechanisms that we need as purely government policy instruments, or would it be a public-private partnership of moving finance? How would it work in practice?
I think it's all of the above, but I think government has to give more of a lead. I mean, I've been involved with some think tanks over the last couple of years, where it's been actually quite interesting where I've sat down with chief executives of major financial institutions in the West who've actually said that under their current mandates, they are unable to invest as much as they would like in ESG goals, and they need government push to help them do so. So if you think about just basic things, like in the US, there's this argument around how does a pension plan invest in ESG investments when it is not obvious, not provable that those ESG investments are going to be better than non-ESG investments. That the fiduciary responsibility of a pension plan in the US is to make as much money as possible for its investors, not to invest for the long term in sustainability, which is much less quantifiable, if you like, than just following stock market trends. So that's the sort of area where governments can help clarify fiduciary responsibility for pension plans, for instance, say that you have to have take more cognizance of future generations rather than pure financial consideration. So there are areas, I think, that it's going to be a necessity for governments to push corporations forward, but it's going to be a combination of private and public partnership, private money only, and governmental policy. It has to be all of those things have to be joined up. And I think that's where we are making progress. I know it's often not discernible, but I think we are making progress when you think of the political pressures that most Western governments are under to do a better job in this regard. So I do think it's changing, but to expect capitalism to do it on its own is not right. And I think that's where the system needs to be tweaked to do a better job of delivering the wealth that we undoubtedly have as a world to where we need it to be. I honestly think we have enough money. I think we have enough technology solutions. What we need to do is to put all of those together in a way where government helps that money get challenged to where it needs to go. Taxation policy, for instance, is one thing. And there are a lot of conversations about carbon pricing and taxing emissions. Those are areas we absolutely have to resolve, because those drive investment analysis.
How much of this needs to happen at the UN level, do you think, at the international level, as opposed to just the national level?
Well, it ultimately has to happen at a national level, but I think the UN can be, as it always has been, a very effective moral force for pushing countries towards where we need them to go. But at the end of the day, the UN has not proven itself to be an enforcement body in any area. But it is a body that has substantial moral leadership and is wonderful for airing and discussing these issues. But ultimately, it has to be at a national level that people push these things forward. And obviously, that's where the challenge is, that it is hard to get all countries to push forward in the same direction at the same pace, and different countries therefore feel that they're being disadvantaged because they're further ahead in the race than others, and therefore have got a competitive disadvantage for being at the forefront of ESG initiatives. And again, I think one needs to be careful not to be too depressed about that. I think it's inevitable that it's a bit three steps forward, two steps backwards. But I do think when you stand back and you look at the last 25 years and see how far we've come, that we've actually made a huge amount of progress. And I think we will, over the next generation, make a huge amount of progress. The question is, we need to go faster. Can we get to where we need to do? We need to get to quickly enough. And I think that I think that pressure is building in the right direction, and I'm still positive that that we will be able to get there.
Do you think there's some confusion at the international level over how financial flows are going to channel towards solving ESG problems, and specifically climate change? We hear about targets that we need to hit for finance to sufficiently fund sustainable development, but we don't hear so much about mechanisms and the role of governments. Do you think there needs to be more detail on the international level as to how these financial mechanisms are going to work?
I do. I mean, I think that's an excellent observation. I mean, I do think there needs to be a lot more thought on the practical ways in which we can help a country's savings be directed to the right paths. And inevitably, how do you help the financial system? The financial system is very, very sensitive to incentives. And so the incentives can obviously come in two shapes and sizes. One is a positive incentive and the other is a negative incentive. And I don't think governments do enough in terms of taxation policies, penalties for certain types of aberrant behavior, but also subsidies and incentives for investing in the right ways. So I think you're absolutely right. There's a lack of policy coordination around helping companies move themselves in the right direction. And I think there's a lot more thinking that needs to be done in that area. There's a lot of wishful thinking and belief in certain quarters that financial markets are more perfect than they are. And I think governments would do better to sort of understand that financial people in general are extremely thoughtful, intelligent folk who respond to what they see in front of them, and governments aren't giving them enough of a push towards where we all need them to go.
Thank you so much for your insights, Paul.
Pleasure. Enjoyed it.